It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll mark the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Wilderness Act of 1964, and we'll talk about how its legacy lives on today.
First, our next guest has spent years visiting the Mercado Oriental, Central America's largest market. The market is a sprawling maze of vendors, and as the saying goes, if it's not for sale there, you maybe can't buy it anywhere.
Our guest says the Nicaraguan market is an example of the world's growing underground economy. Instead of having formal jobs with benefits, whole families work off the books. They have flexibility, but no health insurance, sick leave, or social security. After the global recession, estimates put the world's underground economy at about $2 trillion.
Douglas Haynes joins us now to talk about his time at the Mercado Oriental. He's an associate professor of English at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. He recently wrote about the market for Orion magazine. Douglas, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So when did you first start spending time at the Mercado Oriental in Nicaragua?
I first went there in May 2008 when I led a group of study abroad students working in conjunction with a nonprofit organization called Compas de Nicaragua, which facilitates cross-cultural exchange. And that's where I met Dayani Baudelomar, who's the focus of this piece in Orion. And I've developed a relationship with her over the years, continued going back to the market as I'm working on a book project in which she plays a role there. Diane has been working in the market for a little over 10 years at her own fruit and drink stand. She also grew up in the market when her parents migrated to the city from the countryside when she was 9 years old. So she's basically been working as a street vendor all her life.
I'm sure to a certain extent it has to be seen to be believed, but could you describe the market for us? What would first hit you when you saw it?
So, Diane works in a place called El Gancho de Caminos, or the Road's Hook, which is a major intersection in Managua where there are a lot of buses that come through and where most people are going into the market, the heart of the market, arrive. So when you get off the bus there and you walk into the heart of the market, you're surrounded by this swirl of activity. It's rows and rows and, like you said, a maze of stalls. They're mostly metal stalls, but as you go deeper and deeper into the market, they get closer and closer together. You are surrounded by people pushing carts, women calling out the names of their products, men lugging sacks of produce, goods spilling out into the aisles, into the alleys of the market. There's running gray water going through the market. There's a huge mix of smells, soapy gray water smells, wood smoke, rotting vegetables. Garbage is a major problem in the market because it's so crowded. And in the heart of the market, you can't actually drive in a vehicle. The market's grown so rapidly over the last 40 years in particular that it grew in a very disorganized fashion, although there is kind of a method to the madness in the sense of community in the market. But it's really a feast for the senses. It can be also kind of a sensory overload when you first walk into the market. I'm sure many people who've maybe traveled to open-air markets around the world have experienced something like this. What distinguishes the Oriental is that it's the largest market in Central America and one of the largest markets in Latin America. 53 super Walmarts would fit inside the size
Wow.
of the market. It's really, really massive.
And you write about how this is an example of the growing underground economy. How did you see that played out there?
Well, not all of the vendors in the market are unlicensed vendors. Roughly about a quarter of them are, but the vast majority of people in the market are working off the books. That is, they don't pay taxes on their salary. They get paid in cash. They also have no government social security. So the reason this has happened there, as in many other markets around the world, is in particular due to a series of disasters that's happened in Managua. That's what's making it grow so rapidly. People have turned to vending, to producing food out of their homes, finding a way to make a living whatever way they can as a result of a series of disasters. Managua experienced two earthquakes in the 20th century. The biggest one in 1972 killed thousands of people and leveled the city center. And when that happened, it also leveled other markets in the city. And people looking for work, looking for alternative ways to make a living, went to the one remaining market, the Oriental, where the customers were, basically, to try to make a living. And again in the 1980s, there was another disaster, in this case a war, the U.S.-backed counter-war in Nicaragua, that led people to migrate to the city. And you have, again, whenever people are migrating to the city, they're often farmers who don't have a lot of education, looking for a way to make a living, turn to, again, where the customers are, finding a way to make a living whatever way they can. Another disaster then happened in the 1990s when the government privatized public services, deregulated the business sector, and put a lot of professionals out of work. And again, they turned to the market to make a living. So it's sort of this safety net for people to survive.
And a lot of the workers there, as you said, they don't have health insurance, sick leave, any kind of benefit, really. I mean, it sounds as though they have a certain sort of flexibility, but is there any sort of regulation that, you know, should prevent these people from falling into disaster if they hit an illness or some other life hurdle?
Well, that's one of the big issues if you're a worker like Diane in the market. You are very, very vulnerable to disasters. So, for example, her son, one of her sons, Jadder, died of leukemia when he was 12. He was sick for about 5 years. And during that time, you might imagine Diane had a hard time going to work every day, which meant her business really faltered. It was harder to make a living. Without that social safety net, it's very, very hard for a lot of people to make it in response to disaster, which is one of the reasons I find this story so interesting and so compelling, this place, because we often have debates in this country about what the value of the social safety net is, what the role of government is. And the Mercado Oriental is a place where you can really see the effects of not having a very regulated economy and also that social safety net that people can fall back on.
And another aspect that you look about at in this piece is the environment and the effect here. And you draw a picture of, you know, people just tossing their garbage in the gutter. What is the environmental impact of a giant market this size?
Well, one of the things, another thing that I think is really important about the market is that it is an embodiment of the waste that is associated with the global economy. This market is not a little isolated provincial market. It's very connected to the global economy. There are products there from all over the world. And of course, our industrial system of producing things produces a lot of waste. But in the U.S., when we go, for example, to a big box store, that waste is out back, sort of tidy, right? You go into the store, it's a very clean experience. You don't see the waste that's associated with the cost of production and selling things. But in the Oriental, you do, because people are so crammed in that even though that they have a waste service, there are people who go through collecting the trash very early every morning, it's hard to keep up with it. And as I said, it's been so densely populated that garbage trucks can't get into the middle of the market. So keeping up with that is very, very hard. It does pose disease risks. And it's obviously not necessarily always a very pleasant environment to be working in. So as in most cases with pollution in the world, it's usually the poorest and the most vulnerable people who are really living with it and paying the highest costs for it.
Now, here in the United States, a lot of the focus is on making big corporations accountable for things like the environment and the impact that they may have, or things like economic transparency. But do you think it's time to start paying more attention to this underground economy that you see typified in the Mercado Oriental?
I think both are true, right? So I think it's very important, obviously, to make corporations accountable for the environmental costs of their doing business. But we're not going to have a sustainable and equitable world if we don't also pay attention to the Mercado Orientales of the world, because the vast majority of workers, I shouldn't say the vast majority, right now it's a little more than half of workers in the world are employed in the informal economy. By 2020, projections are that 2 out of every 3 people in the world will be employed in the informal economy. So we have to find ways to be able to mitigate the environmental costs of places like the Mercado Oriental as well. And also recognize the inequality that exists in the system, that inequality isn't just a result of corporate behavior, but it exists around the world, and you can really see it in places like the Mercado Oriental, where, for example, at night I've been there as the market's emptying out, and you see literally hundreds of people bedding down on cardboard to sleep or, sleep in the night there, or children stooped in the shadows sniffing glue to stave off hunger. So the regulation of the economy needs to reach both the sort of above the boards part of the economy, but also the part that's harder, at least from where we're sitting here in Wisconsin, to see.
Douglas, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Douglas Haynes. He's an associate professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh. He recently wrote about the Nicaraguan market for Orion magazine.